Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast today. For Parenting Month, July 2020, powerful parenting month, and today's episode is no different. We have a very special guest. She has dedicated her entire life to parenting. She's a parenting specialist. She's an author of The Awakened Family and The Conscious Parent and much more. The one and only Dr. Shefali is on the line. How are you doing today, my friend?
Wonderful. I'm so happy to be with all of you. It's so exciting that you are doing this deep work. So I can't wait to dive in to talk about parenting.
Absolutely. Well, I'm a big fan of your work. Your books are present in my household. But for the first time listeners, could you give us a little bit of a background on yourself and what led you to so deeply dedicate yourself to educating parents and help better shape the next generation of young people?
Sure. So I'm a clinical psychologist by trade, but my real impetus to even be a psychologist came from really understanding that we are all psychologically so complex and trying to understand why it is that we suffer. And that led me to psychology to understand childhood and how childhood was a key determiner of how we shape our existence and our stories. And then I went even deeper into meditation and Eastern mysticism to really understand the attachments of the mind and why it is that certain attachments cause certain kinds of suffering, and understanding the role of false attachments and how these are set up to lead us to insecurity and unworthiness. And so East and West kind of integrated into my life, really because I wanted to help myself and help people understand their complexities and also to reduce their suffering.
That's incredible. And you're definitely speaking my language there, that merging of the East and West, right? Because at so many times it seems like they're at odds. But to me, in 2020, I almost feel like there's more of a merging, more of a clashing and a collaboration than ever before. Do you agree with that?
Sure. You know, but people need to understand it deeply. You know, many people meditate because they want to become richer or more successful or more time efficient. And that's not the point of meditation. So people are westernizing Eastern concepts to kind of hack it for their purpose, but they're losing the point of it. And the point of it is really to enter a new state of consciousness, not to hack something for a, you know, an efficient advantage.
Wow, I love that. That's a very powerful distinction. And I'm glad that you brought that up. I would almost like to have you on for Spiritual Month. But today we are here for Parenting Month. And when it comes to parenting, you mentioned Western society. You know, I think that we face in the modern Western world some very, very unique challenges. I'm sure every generation probably felt that way. But in your mind, what are some of the biggest blind spots that we have in our parenting lives, or some of the misconceptions maybe that parents hold?
Oh my God. Because of the Western mindset of achievement and doing and this kind of idea that life has this linear timeline, I think it's really messed parents up and as a consequence, messed children up. We are hyper-focused on the future and hyper-focused on success because we say that's how we're going to be happy. And we teach our children how to gear themselves to society and to culture and to living a false existence, and all the while taking them further and further away from their truth. And that's what causes suffering. It's this Western mindset of doing and achieving without even knowing who it is you really are. And we're all doing that and have been done too by our parents, and we'll continue to do that to our children.
So it almost seems like because of that kind of lack of self-work, that it's just going to perpetuate that cycle. And I can understand why, you know, we probably didn't have time for that self-work when, you know, we were still being established as a species and chased by tigers and things like that. But, you know, I feel like now is the time where we have to address this new layer of Maslow's hierarchy, because it is part of our health, right? Our overall wellness, our well-being.
Oh my goodness. It's so profound that I put it this way. We raise ourselves, or have been raised, and raise our children to follow the false self, to follow the demagogical self of wealth, of status, of belonging, of falsity. And as long as we feed that monkey, that lion, we will inevitably never find inner solace, comfort, contentment, and peace. And that's what we want our children to achieve. Hmm. So we kind of work against the grail of our own belief. You know, we believe in inner comfort, inner solace, inner connection. But yet we are trained and train our children to go outward, out of that, and actually replace that with this false self of disconnection, dysfunction, toxicity, materialism, greed, success, competition, comparison, which further undergirds their existence with unworthiness. And then we wonder why it is our children are not true to themselves.
That's such a fascinating point. And don't let me put words in your mouth, but when you say, you know, you chase these false things, money, status, fame, all these things that really we know don't make you happy. You look at how horribly depressed and troubled some of the biggest celebrities in the world are. How much more evidence do you need of this? So what in your mind do you replace that with? Here at Lifebook, I mean, is it, like you said, that inner work, inner peace, your relationships with your loved ones, health, strength, all of those things that don't really get brought up in the mainstream media?
Well, I think more at the core, you begin to wake up to realize that your life has been mostly a false set of beliefs and a lie, really, and that you need to do some inner work to awaken, to go on a journey, to go on a quest, you know, to awaken your heart, to heal your inner wounds from childhood, and to really heal what society has put inside you, which is not your true self.
Wow. Yeah, that is exactly right. So you're right. It is kind of a consciousness and awakening process and then kind of getting to work.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting to work, you've talked about reparenting ourselves. Can you talk about this idea and what kind of an impact that type of work has with our relationship with our kids? Excuse me.
Oh, yeah. If you don't reparent yourself, you're really going to mess it all up. So reparenting means, you know, going within and yes, working with a therapist, a coach, you know, doing some meditation, going on a solo journey to understand what are your core wounds from childhood. And I write all about this in my books. And then to become aware of these wounds, how they show up in your life, and then to kind of reparent yourself. I do this in my courses, and I teach this through my courses, you know, knowing what your inner child wants and needs and did not get in childhood. And then now there's no parent out there who can give it to you. No alcohol that can fix it, no Botox, no corporate corner office that can give you your inner needs. You have to now reparent yourself. So you have to become your own parent. And this work is so powerful. And once you do the work, then you don't project those wounds onto your children.
Yes.
That emptiness onto your children.
Is that what it's all about? Kind of projection and perpetuation?
Yes, yes, yes.
Breaking that cycle? Because that's how we survived as a species, right? We project our survival techniques. We project everything about ourselves, our very souls and genetics and spiritual imprint on our kids.
Yes.
But now, we're also putting like our baggage on them from our crap when we grew up, when we were kids, right?
Yeah, because in the past, you know, commune or tribal societies, communal or tribal societies did not have this ego of this nuclear family, you know, where my family needs to be amazing and my children need to be amazing and we need to be the top and have the most number of cars in the driveway.
Mm.
This is all a product of some insane industrial society that we now live in, which is now becoming more technological.
Yes.
And isolated from simple communal living. And the more isolated we get from that, the more we achieve and get into this madness, the cycle of ego-driven competition.
Right. And I just don't know if we knew quite the effect it was going to have, you know? Like if you're an ad man and you're trying to do a campaign and you're trying to make your car look really great and on your ad you're making it appear that this car gives the purchaser happiness. Like, I guess I totally understand that from that perspective. But once we've done that times a billion and completely saturated our society with it, I think that it really had some deep, deep affecting consequences on our brains that maybe we didn't expect. Am I making sense there?
Sure. And that we're seeing that with cell phones. You know, we didn't know that, you know, when we bought our kid an iPhone, you know, at least my generation was the first generation to have an iPhone and to then to give it to your kid. We didn't know it would abduct their brain and, you know, make them zombies. We didn't realize that. So, but now we know. So now I tell parents, okay, I sacrifice my kid for you to learn. You know, don't do this to your kids.
Jeez.
Don't give, technology to your children, especially portable screens, till they're teens, if not older. But I didn't know that, so I messed it up. But I'm teaching, advocating other parents to not make the same mistake I made.
I am so worried about the technology, the oversaturation of technology, the constant, like, light speed updating of technology. Like you said, that's a developing brain when you hand them that portable screen. And there's all sorts of connections being made that I worry about. What are some of the pitfalls that we're facing because of technology? How can we avoid and overcome them? I mean, it sounds like you just suggest an outright ban until an age that the parent feels appropriately comfortable with.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the TV was bad enough, but the TV can't be taken with you, with the kid, and you can hide the remote.
Right.
But these phones are insane. For a parent to give a kid who's below 14, 15 a phone, a smartphone, is insanity.
Wow. And again, it's like you don't know. And don't you feel that there's a swinging pendulum? Like you just mentioned, when the TV came out, it was the same thing, right? It was the idiot box. They said that it was going to melt the next generation's brain, right?
Right.
And it didn't do that.
Right.
So what we did is we dismissed all of the downsides, right? It's like, oh, it wasn't as bad as they said. And then we swung hard the other direction, which is, how about we just put it in your hand and stick it right up to your face 24/7? So don't you feel that there's a bit of like a polarity problem, an extremism problem?
Oh, sure. Because we are addicts by nature. You know, you give us too much, we just keep taking.
Mm.
It's very hard for us to self-regulate. We see this in all areas of our lives, with food, with alcohol, with speeding, with gambling, with entertainment. You know, it's hard to be disciplined. So now you give a child, especially whose brain's cerebral cortex has not developed, at least till they're 28, 30, if even then, and you're asking them to regulate this constant stimulation, it just won't happen. It can't happen. You're creating dopamine rushes that are just irresistible. So I wish I had known this. You know, I wish I had known. I knew the TV was bad because, quote unquote, bad, because I had generations before me complaining. But because mine was the first generation with the smartphone, I just didn't realize. And I rue the day. I mean, it's given us a lot of convenience, but it is not meant for children.
Yeah, I can totally see that. This is a little bit, you know, we're not talking about young children here, even though sometimes they are on social media. I want to talk to you about social media specifically, aside from technology. You mentioned comparison earlier, you know, with the nuclear family and all that. Does social media worry you? Do you feel that it's maybe having some insidious effects on the young generation?
Oh my God, it doesn't worry me. It frightens me. Yes. Oh. Does. It's not meant for young people, because they are being influenced by people who shouldn't influence them. They are following trends and crowds without the parents' approval. For example, my daughter is 17. She's on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok. I can't even keep up with what the last one was. I don't even remember what it was. So I'll come to TikTok like in 7 years when it's already three things that I know. So
you'll be alone on TikTok. That's exactly right. They move at light speed, though.
Like speed. So it's so alarming because they're being influenced and they are gaining their sense of identity off this nonsense and garbage. And they don't know. My daughter's phone is literally an extra finger. I mean, if she doesn't have a phone, she's bleeding. You know, she can't breathe. So it's so tragic. And I feel so terrible that I've contributed to it. But I also know it's signs of the times.
Yes.
But I can help the next generation. But it's not just concerning, it's alarming. It is absolutely having a devastating impact on our children's potential. Maybe after 25, they can, you know, monitor and regulate, but their brains are already fried, you see. By the time my daughter reaches 25, her brain is already half dead, you know, on this nonsense, hours and hours of nonsense.
I mean, I'm a full-grown man. I'm going to be 30 here, and I still feel like Facebook kind of messes me up a little bit sometimes. So
yeah.
I'm not even sure that it's a... Listen, I love all the good that's come from it, right? It's really a tool that you can use, but I just worry that humans aren't that disciplined as a group, and I worry that it's going to go overboard. But I want to focus in on one thing you said, which is they're forming this identity through social media, through their peer groups, through influencers. Is that really what it's about? Is not allowing outside forces, maybe not allowing, but trying your damnedest to be that influencer as the parent and not let outside forces be that primary influencer? Is it about identity and instilling it in our children?
Right. But see, on the other hand, I was just talking about this in one of my groups. On one hand, you know, if the parent is racist, then it's amazing for the kid to see other influencers on social media.
Good point. Media. And
so in that one case, I am very happy for social media, because you don't want your kid to be raised by racists and then never see another perspective. But now the children of that racist family is going to be like, hey, I'm seeing other stuff on social media yes. that parent didn't want them to see, right? So in that very specific aspect, or, you know, a person who is in the closet and can't come out, but now yes. she's found solace on social. So in these cases where it's clear that the parent is so harmful and putrid for the developing psyche, then the social media is more benevolent.
I didn't
much
think about
better.
That. That's a good point.
But in the other way, like say in my home where I know, quote unquote, I am providing the most possible conscious outlook, then I am worried, yes, that there's putrescence out there. But I can then talk about it. So I'm not that worried, but it is something I need to always check my daughter on and go, hey, you know that this is junk, right? You know this is nonsense.
That's
right?
great.
You know, so I'm always checking. But parents have to be very strong themselves and talk about social media and the impacts of it, both positive and negative. At this stage in our children's lives, they if they use it for connection to their peers, okay, I understand. But mm-hmm. also what that does, it replaces face-to-face interaction. And that's not good. So, yeah. you know, teens today are less dating. They're not dating as much as they were dating before. Now, on one hand, yeah, they won't get STDs and pregnancies. But on the other hand, what the hell are they doing? They're in their rooms, you know?
That's the whole point of being, yeah, being young and in love. It's like so weird, Shefali. I feel like things are just like long yeah. held constructs and ways of lives are just falling away.
Yeah.
To be honest, it kind of frightens me as a parent, and I don't want to show my child that type of insecurity.
Right. You don't have to get frightened, but you need to take action.
Yes.
You know, we are the generation saying, please watch TV and can you please kiss your boyfriend, like meet your boyfriend? Like, I'm so happy when my daughter's boyfriend comes over because I'm like, at least she's having some healthy contact. I'm like, yeah, it's okay if you make out.
It's the opposite. Because, before it was chasing him off with a shotgon. Now it's
right,
like, please come in.
right, because now they're so isolated, and what the hell are they doing alone in their rooms, you know?
You are speaking my language and you are opening my mind, so I totally agree with you. Let me ask you about this balance, though, something that really I think I kind of struggle with and try to balance, which is you're preparing your child to be out in that world independently and deal with all of the inputs and all of the struggles. But I'm also simultaneously trying to protect her as a young person because I don't want to just throw her out there. You know what I mean? It's about building the independence to where they can log into Facebook and not lose their minds, building their strength that way, but also kind of like coddling and protecting them so you don't traumatize them. Am I making sense?
Yeah, it's a balance, you know, with young kids, you begin with sheltering and giving them predictability, safety, and comfort. They don't need to know about racist issues
right.
because you're going to make sure they're not racist. So they don't need to know about somebody dying. They don't need to know about the war in Iraq. They don't need to know about pesticides and you know, bacteria out
just
there.
The they basics. I like that.
They don't, yeah. So for children under the age of 7, they just need to know the world is safe and they can trust you and life is predictable.
Wow.
And then from 8 to 13, they can know things in measured ways. And then 13 onwards, you really can't control it because their friends will tell them. You know?
You're
That's why you try to protect them as much as possible, not in a foolish way, but their brains can't take too much of reality at that point.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Do you worry about this very impressive and zealous next generation who seems to be very passionate about their beliefs? I think it's interesting that you said from 0 to 7, it's probably healthier to not inundate them or saturate them with that sort of thing. Do you think it's just as important to hold off until that 7 age as it is to impart your values?
Yeah, I think so. I think the less you put your own projections onto your kids, even if they may be the best projections in the world, and allow your kid to explore and play and be creative and develop, and then slowly introduce them to your ideas and the world's ideas, the better. But parents, you know, even the ones who are the most well-intentioned, will shove their expectations on their kids, you know, either in religion or education or in gender identity issues.
Ways they might not realize.
And ways they may not even realize. But it's really the fertile ground for the child to discover who it is they are.
Shefali, this has just been wonderful. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Of course.
Before we sign off, though, one question about non-parents, you know, some of the younger Lifebook members, some of the Lifebook members who don't have kids, who aren't going to have kids, whoever it may be, what are some effective or unorthodox ways they could make an impact? In your professional opinion, how can they help the next generation without having a child of their own?
Well, my goodness, it's really not about being a parent. It's about understanding that we were raised by parents. And just by that, they should do my courses and other courses on awakening, because you don't have to be a parent to do your reparenting. Each one of us has to reparent ourselves from the trauma and the unworthiness that we inherited from our childhood. So this is about non-parents specifically. It's about all people needing to do their childhood healing on their own by reparenting themselves. And then if you become a parent or not, that's kind of extra.
It's such an important distinction. And I almost feel a piece that needs to be highlighted in the Lifebook process, which is, that's what we talk about in parenting, is it's not just about you parenting the next generation. It's also about your relationship with your parents. That's what the Lifebookers work on.
Exactly.
But the reparenting specifically, I think, is really fascinating. And I know that you're going to get a lot of Lifebookers looking into your course now. So look forward to that. And of course, where can we find you? I want to say drshefali.com. Don't let me get out the wrong URL.
Correct. On Instagram and at that website and my Facebook. Yep.
Exactly. Perfect. And it's all there?
It's all there. Thank you. Thank
it's
you for having
there,
me.
It's all there, baby. Of course, this was a really lovely interview. Truly one of my favorite parenting interviews I've ever done. So I want to thank you and tell you that I really appreciate everything you're doing and your whole mission here in the world.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care of yourself. We're going to let you go and then I'll sign off. Bye-bye.
Bye, love. Thank you.
What a lovely interview with Dr. Shefali. Go and check out everything she's doing. All right, Lifebookers. I hope you're having a fantastic parenting month. I hope you're having a good time crafting your life vision. Best of luck out there as you work towards achieving it. This is Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.